Hello everyone, herb lovers, sustainable health seekers, herbal medicine fans. Welcome back to Herbcast, our podcast from Herbal Reality. In every episode, we explore how traditional wisdom and up-to-date herbal science can meet the needs of the hour and support a sustainable and effective approach to our health. As you know, herbs have nourished human health for thousands of years, and whilst they hold so much potential to meet today's numerous health challenges, there are still so many questions to be answered. And we're delighted to have you with us today as we continue to deepen our understanding together. So get comfy, pour yourself a cup of herbal tea, and let's begin. Today's episode is hosted by Marion McConaughey.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Herbcast. I'm really excited about today's episode because it's a topic that's close to my own heart. Today I'm talking to herbalist Melinda McDougall about the menopause, to HRT or not to HRT, and the herbal path that we can take through it. Melinda is a member of NIM and a registered medical herbalist who specialises in natural menopause support and runs a busy online clinic seeing patients across the UK and beyond. She speaks regularly about a holistic approach to menopause and positive ageing on podcasts, webinars, in-person events and conferences, including the British Menopause Society's annual conference in 2024 last year. Melinda, welcome.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Marion. Looking forward to chatting to you about this very exciting topic.
Absolutely. So menopause at the moment feels a little bit like the Wild West. There's a huge amount of interest, which is really long overdue, and lots of new research coming out about the perimenopause and women and its and their experience of it. And this has kind of informed a lot of current debate that's raging, but it's also led to a really overwhelming amount of information online, which is really hard for people to navigate through. We've got advocates for a woman's right to a more manageable or even bearable experience going head to head with those who feel that menopause should not be over-medicalized. Let's dive right in. What's your view on that?
So you'll be probably not surprised to hear that I sit somewhere in the middle of all of that. So even though I'm a medical herbalist, I see women right across the spectrum in my clinic. So I treat women who are using HRT but might need a bit of extra support, women who can't take HRT for all sorts of medical reasons, women who choose not to take HRT would just like a bit of natural support to get through the transition, and also women who may have had a surgical or chemical menopause, so induced by, some kind of cancer diagnosis usually. So I think that there are, there are women out there who hugely benefit from using HRT and would really struggle otherwise. And then I see a lot of cases sometimes where perhaps women have started taking HRT even though they've got no symptoms whatsoever. So they are sort of buying into this idea that it is, that they're taking it as a protective measure against certain health concerns. You know, perhaps they've had a family history of osteoporosis, for example. So It's a very, as we know, everyone's experience of menopause is really individualized. So it's hard just to come out with a blanket statement like menopause is being over-medicalized. I think it's been severely under-resourced. There's been no focus on it for years and years and years. And so the pendulum's kind of swung very far in the other direction now. But it's kind of coming back to the middle, I think, and people are starting to have a bit more of a sensible conversation about how they want their menopause to feel. They have so much more information than they did before. And yes, as you said in your introduction, the options are vast and can feel very overwhelming.
Yeah, I think that's why it can really help to have a herbalist to talk through, you know, what your options are and what might suit you. Like you, I've had patients who have used HRT alongside herbs, and those who have, you know, managed to just work on herbs and lifestyle adjustments themselves. But yeah, It's definitely a personal decision.
Yes.
What sort of herbs and lifestyle recommendations have you found to be really effective, or, you know, for certain people?
So, you know, as you know, as a herbalist, it's very much a holistic approach to menopause. So it's not just about finding that silver bullet and that one herb that's going to help you. It's very much about looking at lifestyle and diet and sleep, and even gut health can be very important. You know, and I think that as you go through the menopause transition, it's such a huge opportunity that we're given. It's almost like a massive, you know, tap on the shoulder for us all to really have a bit of a reboot and a reset, and to take a long, hard look at where we are with our health and our lifestyle, and even our jobs and relationships. You know, everything kind of comes to the fore during this transition. You know, some of my patients have described it as sort of picking up rocks that you wouldn't normally look under and seeing what's under there, things you haven't looked at for years, or kind of cleaning out the back of your cupboard and just kind of really getting everything sorted for going through into the next phase of your life. So it's very much a holistic approach, but, you know, there are so many herbs that we can call on as we go through this transition. You know, there are obviously, you know, hundreds of herbs in our repertoire that we can call on. But, you know, if we kind of break it down into, there's different areas of menopause, because again, everyone has a very individualized experience and individualized symptom pattern. But I would say that probably my favorite menopausal herb is going to be black cohosh. And I really like that herb. I think it's a really good all-rounder for menopause. It's not going to suit everybody, but it certainly addresses a lot of issues in one go. So it's really good for hot flushes and night sweats, and it's really good for joint pains and very good for some of the neurological symptoms, so some of those kind of anxiety symptoms you might get with menopause. And it's an incredibly well researched herb. There's vast amounts of research on it. People always complain that there's no research on herbs and herbal medicine, but because menopause, you know, you've got to remember that about sort of 10-15 years ago, when there was a big HRT scare, because of that, people put a lot of focus on herbs. And so there are huge studies and huge trials that have been done on various herbs. And particularly with black cohosh, there's a really great meta-analysis that came out in 2020, which is incredibly comprehensive, which pooled the data from 35 clinical studies. You know, this comprised over 40,000 women. So that's a huge amount of data for herbs. You know, we don't normally get those big kind of studies all pooled together. And it was very, you know, emphatically conclusive that black cohosh was very effective for the physiological and psychological symptoms of menopause. And it was as effective as low-dose transdermal estradiol. So that's pretty huge conclusion to come to. You know, and in Spain, you know, the Spanish Menopause Society has actually come out with a big statement saying that they believe that black cohosh is as effective as low-dose transdermal estrogen. So that's a, you know, pretty big vote of confidence for black cohosh.
You know, absolutely, that's definitely one of my favorites to use. I've had some interesting conversations about dosage for black cohosh. Mm-hmm. and that potentially herbalists may sometimes be giving more than they need to based on what the evidence is. What's your view on that, and what sort of typical dose would you give of Black Cohort?
Yeah, so I've definitely dialed it back over the years. I think when I first started practicing, I was probably going in with a pretty high dose. But I've actually found over the years that you can get really good effects with literally like 10 mils of a 1 in 2 per week of Black Cohosh. And that can be really effective just in that sort of low dosage area. Because sometimes I've found that if you go up too high, particularly in some women who are really sensitive, you can get reactions like headaches and nausea and things like that. Yeah. So it's good just to start off with a gentle dose and see how people respond to that.
Yeah, more is not always less. I mean, less is not always more.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah. And I think there's a herbalist called Hananya Bryce Yitzma, and she's done lots of brilliant work on Black Cohosh, and she was one of my teachers. And she's written two great books on herbal medicine for gynecological conditions, and she talks a lot about Black Cohosh, and she's done a lot of research that, you know, we can all build on in those books. So yeah, it's a great herb, and also very much misunderstood, because for a long time people thought it was a phytoestrogen, but we now know that it actually works more on neurotransmitter pathways in our bodies. And those are the same neurotransmitter pathways that hot flushes are originated from. So that's really important for women who've had an estrogen sensitive cancer or a diagnosis like that, because they can then feel really reassured that it's an okay herb for them to take.
Yeah, and it's important to note that there have been studies to show that Black Cohosh is safe for women who have had breast cancer. They've sort of demonstrated that safety.
Yeah, and also it gets such a bad rap, that herb, because you know, people have been very scared of it for, you know, potentially causing liver issues or liver damage. And there's been various case reports linked to Black Cohosh. But when you dig into those case reports and the research, you know, and people have written a lot of papers on this as well. There's a lot of evidence that it's not going to cause, that it is safe, that it is not going to cause any liver damage, and that that was usually down to cases of adulteration.
Yeah.
Or people taking supplements that contained many, many different herbs. So it's impossible to sort of pin it on the Black Cohosh. So yeah, it's a very misunderstood herb, I think.
Yeah, we often get situations like that where you've got cases of adulteration and then fears about safety with a herb when it's become particularly successful, and when lots of people have been using it. You know, and this sort of same sort of thing happened with Carver, didn't it, in the early 2000s?
Yeah, so I'm sort of trying to help rebrand Black Cohosh and make people understand that it's a safe and really beneficial herb to take through menopause.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me about some of the other herbs that you like using. Are there any others that stand out?
So I would say in every single one of my herbal medicine prescriptions for menopause, and obviously we're talking about tincture prescriptions here, I would always put in some form of adaptogen and usually some form of liver support. So the adaptogens that I would use really regularly are things like ashwagandha, rhodiola, and goji kola. So really useful in menopause. And I think we're really starting to understand more about how stress impacts menopausal symptoms.
Yeah.
And so as we go through this transition, and, you know, midlife is an incredibly stressful time for women generally as well.
Yeah.
But the more stress we're under, the more adrenaline and cortisol that we're pumping out, you know, the more our menopausal symptoms are going to be heightened. So we obviously hear a lot about, you know, estrogen and progesterone in menopause, but not so much about how cortisol and adrenaline affects us. And so that's why I think adaptogens are so key for this transition. They're so supportive.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because people are actually starting to study ashwagandha, particularly for benefits in menopause, you know, whereas there's heaps of research on ashwagandha looking at how it functions as an adaptogen and how it might function for stress support, but not so much particularly looking at menopause. But that's starting to grow now, which I find really interesting, that it's being looked at more as a key transitional herb across that time.
Hi there, Sebastian here. If you're enjoying this episode, you might like to know there are plenty more herbal insights on our website. Come and discover more on the science, tradition, and practical use of herbs at herbalreality.com. You can check out our special features such as our herb library, where we have monographs written by clinical practitioners on over 200 herbs used in Western, Chinese, and Ayurvedic herbal traditions. We cover the traditional use, modern research, how practitioners use the herbs in clinic, any quality and safety data, as well as a sustainability listing, so you know how to safely use the best quality herbs in a way that protects your health and that of the planet. You can search herbs by the action, grouping them all together, say for immunity or by energetic function, all the immunological, heating or cooling herbs in one place. You can also sign up for our newsletter for plant-powered wisdom delivered straight to your inbox for the most up-to-date information. Right, let's get back to today's conversation.
It's an interesting one because there's quite a lot of discussion in the media about the benefits of testosterone for women in perimenopause. And obviously ashwagandha, which is in Ayurveda, is traditionally a male herb and thought to be able to increase testosterone. And I think studies have seen that it can increase testosterone in men, but not necessarily in women. And I wonder if they looked at women in perimenopause, they might find that it may increase testosterone in perimenopause, and it may be a case of the population that they're looking at in the studies. Do you know why that might be, that they've seen an effect on men but not women for testosterone at all?
No, I don't. I mean, it sounds like there's a real gap in research there that needs to be filled, you know. Because they have looked at ashwagandha and how it might modulate things like hot flushes and even how it can improve vaginal dryness and, obviously help with sleep. Which can be really chronically affected by perimenopause. But yeah, it sounds like they need to fill that gap with a bit more research. You know, there's so many things we could potentially study when it comes to herbal medicine and menopause. And, you know, it's such a vast area of research.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting one for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Have you, on the sort of topic of testosterone, have you used any of our kind of more classic testosterone supporting herbs at all in this way?
Not necessarily, not directly. Because usually women are using testosterone for libido and for mental clarity and for energy. And so there's not, I wouldn't say I'm using herbs to sort of try to boost testosterone in any way, but there are lots of herbs that can help with those three areas. So, for example, Gotu Kola is a great one for mental focus and clearing that brain fog of menopause. You might look at something like rhodiola or Siberian ginseng, Eleuthero, to give you some energy if you're feeling really fatigued. Things like maca root and shatavari I find really helpful for libido. That can make a really big difference to someone's libido as they're going through perimenopause.
That's interesting. Maca's come up a couple of times in the conversations I've had for this series, and it's not a herb that I'm familiar with at all. So I think it's definitely one I'll be doing some more research into and exploring a little bit. But shatavari is definitely one that I'm really familiar with and will use regularly. Really, really good for vaginal dryness. It's kind of really nourishing and supportive.
It's very juicy.
Yeah, and in my work at Pucker, when I was at Pucker, we collaborated with some researchers at Exeter University in their bioactive research group on Chitavri, and they were giving it first off to postmenopausal women, just a gram a day, and they weren't doing strength training at all, but they found that just taking the Chitavri a gram a day for 6 weeks, they were able to increase their hand grip strength. So muscle strength increased while they were taking it. And they've subsequently gone on to do other studies in perimenopausal women and even premenopausal women to show the benefits of Chitavri alongside strength training for helping to boost muscle development and muscle strength. And just actually the way they've found that it improves the way that the muscles contract. Which is really interesting, and particularly as we know in perimenopause, we need to really be careful to help maintain that muscle and maintain strength throughout that period. So,
really good. I love that herb. And also the thing about maca root is that it's so easy to incorporate it into your sort of daily life because... Mm. You know, it's sold really widely in health food shops and even supermarkets. You can buy maca root powder, and just even adding, you know, a dessert spoon of maca root to your sort of daily smoothie can make a big difference to your menopausal symptoms. So it's a really easy thing for women to actually incorporate into their sort of daily lives as they go through perimenopause and menopause. So that's one I always love to recommend. You can obviously take it in capsule form as well.
Yeah, but there's something nice about being able to incorporate things into your food, isn't it? There's sort of it feels more natural.
Yeah,
I guess. And things like flaxseed and soya as well to just increase that phytoestrogen intake. Mm. I did see a study on using fermented red clover, which I thought was quite interesting because red clover obviously is phytoestrogen. We do know that some women aren't very good metabolizers of phytoestrogens and maybe won't be getting as much benefit as others. So I thought it was quite an interesting approach to ferment it and potentially improve its bioavailability.
Yeah, I'm so glad you've brought that up because I always have been really disappointed in red clover. You know, I always sort of gave it as part of a prescription and I just always felt really kind of meh about it. Like it just wasn't kind of doing what I wanted it to do. I didn't really see much of a result. And so when I started kind of digging into this a bit more and really reading about how, you know, our gut microbiome is so important for the metabolism of phytoestrogens, it really suddenly made sense as to why this wasn't really working in the way I wanted it to work when I was giving it to patients. Mm. So I think this whole concept of fermented red clover is so clever and really interesting. So it'll be, I don't know if there's any actual products out there at the moment. There probably are a few coming onto the market. Mm. But I love the way that sort of the supplement market, even though it is the Wild West, but I love the way that it does respond to that sort of research. And then people start to think, oh yeah, let's develop this sort of product and see how that might work to benefit women as they're going through menopause. Because, you know, there is a lot of research on red clover looking at how it might benefit, you know, bone health, for example.
Yeah.
So if we can get it right with red clover, it could be really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I wanted to bring up was the difficulty of navigating women who are going through perimenopause, but also have an estrogen dominant condition like fibroids, for example. How do you manage that when you've got a situation like that?
So this is a really important point. And I think it's one that the sort of HRT conversation doesn't really address very well. Because the issue with HRT is it's very much sort of one size fits all. And obviously there's different dosages that you can sort of play around with and there's different forms of, you know, application. So like gels, patches, you know, pessaries, you know, oral tablets, you know, there's all sorts of different forms of HRT. But if you've got a sort of high estrogen condition, as you might see in perimenopause, so, you know, for example, fibroids, as you've mentioned, or even that sort of heavy bleeding that you get a lot in perimenopause, which is a really debilitating problem for lots of women. If you're adding HRT into the mix, it could potentially be making it worse. And that's why I mentioned earlier that I always put some kind of liver support in with any sort of herbal medicine prescription for menopause. So things like dandelion root find really helpful, just to help support the liver, because our liver is so important at this time of life. And if you're using any sort of HRT, you really need to make sure your liver is breaking down and metabolizing those hormones, and then excreting them out through your bowel. So your gut health is so important and really comes into play here as well. So looking at gut health is hugely important. If someone's constipated, that's not going to help either. So you've got to really work on that. You know, and this is these are some of the conversations I think that people need to hear more, because often women are just sort of using HRT and it's not working, or they're getting side effects, or you know, they're getting bloated or putting on weight, and all sorts of things can happen if your liver is not functioning properly. You know, but I think if someone is struggling with heavy bleeds, you know, that's a whole picture that needs to be looked at in terms of liver support. You know, looking at stemming that heavy bleeding with lovely herbs like yarrow and shepherd's purse. But also looking at any sort of iron deficiency that might be present as well. So there's, you know, there's so much as herbalists we can do to help people in those situations.
And I think it's really helpful that we can have regular check-ins with people. You know, when people take HRT, it's generally prescribed and then you go away and manage it by yourself. But if you're having a regular check-in with the herbalist, you can kind of adjust the mix as it goes along, you know, because obviously in perimenopause, the hormones go crazy. It's kind of up and down. And, you know, some months the fibroid condition or the estrogen dominant condition might be flaring up, and at other points that's sort of dampening down and the problem is the HRT symptoms. But you can kind of adjust as you go along, which is this is really, really helpful.
It's so helpful, because I've got this great graph somewhere and it shows what our hormones are doing as we go through perimenopause. And when you look at that perimenopausal phase, so it's like a line graph, and you look at what estrogen and progesterone are doing, and it's just, it's like a child got some crayons and did a massive scribble, because there's just no predictability at all to that phase. Whereas you're, you know, you might have been used to having a regular monthly cycle, and then it all just goes completely haywire, and it's a real roller coaster. So one week you might have really high estrogen, next week it might plummet, same with progesterone, and you know, just wreaks havoc. And I think that's why it's so beneficial to work with a herbalist who can really respond to where you're at and sort of ride that roller coaster with you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of menopause cafe type sort of supportive groups being set up. And have you got involved in any of these in your local area, or organised any and got involved as a herbalist?
I haven't in my local area, but I do a lot of online talks for sort of perimenopausal and menopausal women, whether that's, you know, sort of workplace talks where I'll go and talk to a group of women in a company about sort of natural options for managing menopause. I also work a lot with the Menopause and Cancer Organization, supporting women who are going through menopause after a cancer diagnosis. And I've sort of written chapters for lots of different books. And I really love doing talks and just opening women's eyes to the fact that there are other ways of doing this, you know, which is nothing new. I mean, women have used herbal medicine to get through the menopause for hundreds of years, you know, so we're just drawing on that very old knowledge, but updating it with science.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like that kind of supportive women-led group is really important to that this transition period. And I guess it's just, it's all suddenly all unknown and needing support.
Yeah, and I think women sharing their experiences is really important, and sort of listening to other women and what they're going through, it can just make you feel less alone. And, you know, I think I did a talk at a festival last year, and a woman came up to me afterwards and said, I had no idea that all this heavy bleeding I was experiencing was not normal and something I could do something about, because she just hadn't talked to anyone about it. Yeah. And she'd just been cracking on, you know, which I think so many women just do, you know, because they don't want to talk about some of these taboo subjects. But so listening and talking is hugely beneficial.
Yeah, having that shared experience and recognising that the weird things that are going on are things that other people have experienced as well.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because perimenopause is still very much associated with hot flushes in the kind of society's mind. And, you know, for a really long time, any other symptoms weren't really considered connected to that. And I think the Menopause Society now lists about 36 different symptoms in their symptom checklist, but I've seen much longer lists than that. Do you think there are any of these symptoms that people link with menopause that are unjustified? For example, like, is it possible that we're associating some of the kind of normal signs of aging with menopause, for example?
Yeah, potentially. You know, I think that is an issue. I think the whole, you know, we could talk for hours, I think, about, you know, this sort of anti-aging, you know, pressure that is on women from society. You know, I think getting older is seen as a bit of a sin sometimes. You know, it's just another thing for women to, another stick to beat women with. You know, we kind of go through our lives trying to conform to so many societal pressures from, you know, when we're very young, you know, as to how we look, you know, our weight, you know, like everything from our hair to our faces to, you know, not being allowed to have any wrinkles. It's all about not being allowed to get old. And, you know, I would really counter that and say that there's plenty to celebrate about getting older, and lots of people don't make it this far in life. So we are lucky to even get to the menopausal stage. You know, certainly no one wants to go into old age feeling creaky and old and unhealthy. So that's something I really support, healthy aging. But I think trying to sort of erase all signs of aging is not good for us. You know, it puts too much pressure on us, and it's also really hard on your bank balance as well.
Yes.
But I think also sometimes people blame everything on the menopause as to how they're feeling. And so that's why I always think, you know, doing really good blood work's really important as well, just to sort of rule out other things. You know, are you deficient in vitamin D? Are you low in iron? Have you got a nutritional deficiency or some kind of vitamin deficiency? Are there other things going on? Is there something wrong with your thyroid? You know, there's so many stories in the media of women who sort of blamed everything on the menopause and then found out that they actually had a completely different condition.
Yeah.
So it's really important to keep an open mind and also get professional help as you go through menopause if you're worried about anything.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the problems that we experience are to do with the patriarchy and our position in society and how much pressure is on women at sort of in midlife to sort of be able to do it all. Mm-hmm. What can we tell younger women to do to change so that when they get to perimenopause, they're not massively overwhelmed by everything that's happening? What can we do beforehand? How can we prepare women?
I think that's really important. I would love to actually do more work and more talks around speaking to women in their 30s. Because I think if you can be more prepared as you head into your sort of 40s, mid 40s, kind of heading into that perimenopausal phase, I think knowledge is important. So knowing about what you're getting into, but not fearing it, is really important. I think there's a lot of fear out there around menopause that it's going to be this incredibly awful, debilitating thing you're going to go through. And that's not necessarily the case for everyone. I think being more prepared in terms of looking after your health, sort of as you're getting to your late 30s or early 40s. I mean, ideally, you'd look after your health throughout your entire life. But, you know, perhaps when we're younger, we might be sort of leading more of a wilder life. I think just knowing that the better your health is as you get towards perimenopause, the easier that transition's going to be. It's really difficult because midlife can be very, very stressful and we don't have control over that always. We might be looking at, we might have bereavements in the family, or we might have difficult teenage children, or perhaps we might even have a toddler or a baby and go straight into perimenopause these days. So there's lots of things that are slightly out of our control. But I think if we just understand what's going on a bit more as we head into that perimenopausal phase, then it'll be a lot easier for us and know where to get the support.
Yeah. There's loads of information online about different diets and ways of eating that can help. What's some of the kind of standard dietary advice that you will give to women? Obviously, everything has to be personally tailored to the individual, but are there any kind of rules that you adhere to?
Yeah, so one of my big things is that just sort of educating women about the fact that our bodies metabolize glucose differently as we start to go through menopause. Mm-hmm. And, women often complain about gaining weight as they go through menopause. And that can be for so many reasons. It can be for stress or sedentary lifestyles or eating too much processed foods and all of those things. But I think it's just really good to be mindful of really cutting back on sugar and white carbohydrates as you go through menopause. Mm-hmm. And, opt for more slow release carbohydrates. So you sort of, your brown carbs, your brown rice and, whole grain pastas rather than white pastas and things like that. Because our bodies just aren't metabolizing glucose and insulin like they used to. So that's one thing that can really help. It can also really help with mood and hormone balance as well. If you're just more mindful of cutting back on sugary foods and white carbs. But there's so many things you can do with diet to help you through menopause, such as really supporting your liver with, lots of green leafy vegetables. Just focusing on a Mediterranean diet is perfect, and that's a really anti-inflammatory diet. So, boosting oily fish, lots more veg, go for the whole grain carbs, lots of water, cut back on coffee, try to cut back on alcohol if you can. All of those things are going to really help you as you go through menopause. Is there anything else you'd add to that, Marion?
I've increased my protein intake.
Yes. Cause,
mainly because I'm strength training now, which I wish I'd started doing when I was much younger. But yeah, because I'm really enjoying it. But yeah, I realised I was probably undernourishing myself in terms of protein. Yeah. I'm not going crazy on it. There's some very high protein recommendations around, but just a little bit more than I was before. But yeah, the Mediterranean diet. And I think also really working on the microbiome and kind of encouraging use of different herbs and spices, just culinary herbs and spices, particularly to help support the microbiome.
Yeah, and also more fermented foods as well. So, you know,
exactly.
Your kimchi and your sauerkraut and kombucha and things like that can be really helpful, and fermented soy products.
Yeah. Are you more likely to recommend that people include fermented foods in their diet than to sort of, say, use a probiotic, for example?
It sort of depends, really. Sometimes, you know, it's pretty obvious that we need to do some quite targeted gut health work. So a probiotic will come into play there. Mm. But if people have generally good gut health, then I just usually recommend that they try to incorporate a little bit more fermented food in their diet just to really keep that microbiome really healthy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lots of really amazing advice. We're coming to the end of the episode. One last question. What do you think is the most important thing that women can do to help empower themselves to have better health, particularly in this transitional time?
Oh, that's a good question, Marion. I think just really listen to your body. Listen to what's going on for you. Don't listen to all the noise out there. Just really tune in to what's going on for you, what you're noticing is arising, and then tailor your needs and your support around that. So don't be driven by what's going on social media and what you worry about that you might need support with. Just really tune into what's going on for you. You know, changing your diet, you know, getting more sleep, you know, getting rid of all those processed foods from your diet, taking lots of lovely herbs and things like maca root, flaxseed, for example. There's so much you can do, boosting exercise. There's so much you can do, and it will help you to just feel so much better generally in your life. And you can feel fantastic as you go through menopause. It is possible.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, lovely to talking to you, Melinda, and great advice. Really enjoyed today. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Marion. It's great to chat.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. We hope today's conversation has planted a seed of inspiration and deepened your understanding of herbal medicine, and even answered a question or two. Please do subscribe to Herbcast wherever you're listening to this right now, and you'll be sure to never miss an episode. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love you to give us a 5-star rating and share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. As they say, learn something, teach something. It really helps us to reach more people and spread the good herbal world. You can also use a podcast review to share your comments and feedback about Herbcast, or perhaps make a suggestion for a future episode. It's always great to hear your views. If you can't wait till the next episode, you'll find plenty more herbal insights and all the previous Herbcast episodes on our website, and of course on social media. All the links you need are in the episode show notes. Until next time, take care, and thanks again for joining us for another episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. Bye for now.